All right, so what do we get into now? We get into this UFO thing. What is this stance that I mentioned before? It's a stance of wishing I could just sit down. Because I'm really tired of it. And in many ways, I'm kind of angry. Kind of angry about it. Because of the fact that it remains a mystery. There are some folks that argue that the unidentified flying object phenomenon, referring specifically to craft, not twinkling lights in the sky or far-off lights that change color and maybe move in a way you're not particularly familiar with, but saucer-shaped craft that don't fly like anything we are familiar with in the air, be it a airplane, helicopter, blimp, or otherwise. Yes, flying saucers, not Venus. Many will argue that they've gone back to prehistory, and that they're depicted in paintings, particularly religious paintings, all over the world. I think I'm actually going to look for a link that shows that, because some of them are really particularly striking when you consider that they were done more than 1,000 years ago. We're not talking Polaroids, we're talking somebody that had to actually sit down and think about what they were drawing and painting, whether it was on a wall or a canvas or otherwise. There are some that argue that it really didn't actually, that the waste didn't hit the propelling blades in earnest until 1947. And even if that's the case, then we've had 60 years of this mystery always somehow just dancing on the edge of fact. Always just far enough out there that you can almost believe that there is a concrete reality to it. If you read enough about it, if you listen to enough of the witnesses, some of whom are extremely credible, then you can somehow shift your head into the idea that most of humanity is living in a consensus reality of denial. If you explore a little further, particularly if you get into contemporary accounts and media treatment of it, then you come to the conclusion that no, most of humanity is not living in denial. It's just the United States as a whole, as a country, and probably at least the government of Great Britain that is living in denial. Or it's all a total crock that's generated an incredible amount of cash for a limited number of people who are particularly good at lying over these past 60 years. When I start to think about this, when I start to comment on this whole UFO thing, and in a way I really am kind of, this is kind of the stepping over into the purview of the weird show, and I think at some point I should probably get together with the Encaffeinated One and maybe one or two other people in a kind of a conference call and devote an episode or two to just this topic, because me commenting on it doesn't even begin to cover it. When I begin to talk about this, did I just make an online an in-show invitation? Yes, I think I did. And well, I meant it. I think that'd be a fabulous thing. If you as a listener to IDDFOS would really rather not hear something like that, write in and let me know. But I think this is valid enough and fits into, if you want to call it a mission statement for IDDFOS, questions that don't really have an answer, but do involve the whole of humanity. Well, the unidentified flying object question certainly falls into that category. And I suppose it's my particular weariness of the fact that it's remained a mystery, my interest in this has ping-ponged between there really must be something to this, I've got to find out more, because I'm fascinated by it. It's ping-ponged from that to the other side of the table where it's just, I can't believe this has held on for so long. How could anybody treat this seriously? This is just a new form of religion. That's probably it's that vacillation, and my being tired of that vacillation, and wanting to just step aside and leave it alone, that's kept it out of the subject matter of this show for 2 years. Let me get back to what I was actually starting to try to say. When I begin talking about this, I have to picture in the room with me certain individuals as I talk about it, because I can't speak about this subject in absolutes. I don't know that anybody really can. It's particularly intellectually dangerous, unfair, and inaccurate to treat the subject flippantly, to make jokes about it, to pretend that anyone connected with it is somehow mentally deficient, lying, or a nutcase, because it's not true. That would be false. That would be an entirely wrong point of view to take. The individuals that I picture in the room with me are people like... now I need to come up with a list of names that I don't have. Maybe this is something that should be... The particulars should actually be saved for a kind of a roundtable discussion on the topic. But there's an air traffic control... an ex-air traffic control chief that has radar records. He is one of that panel put together by Dr. Stephen Greer when he formed the Disclosure Project. There's another fellow that was on that panel who was in charge, not in charge, but had his finger on the button in one of the missile silos, who gave testimony about an unidentified flying object coming in and shutting down the missiles. 10 of them. There's any number of other eyewitness testimonies. There's any number of other videotaped records, radar records, from people that have only something to lose by coming forward and reporting them and making these things available. Not people that have anything to gain. And I put those people in, I imagine those people in the room with me when I talk about it, because it keeps me from saying, well, everybody that's reported a UFO must be nuts, or didn't really know what they were looking at, or are just seeking attention, or are lying for money. And it's very simple to sweep people away like that. Now, at present, I believe, as of this recording, the most comprehensively expert person alive on the subject in terms of being able to lay out known information, factual information, would be Stanton Friedman, I'm pretty sure. The aforementioned Dr. Stephen Greer, I have to admit, I take him with a grain of salt. He certainly is extremely well-spoken, very strong-willed, very dynamic, but at the same time, it comes across more on the extreme end of what I find believable. To put a closure on this for right now, without getting into Roswell, without getting into the Phoenix Lights, without getting into the release of the UFO files that the British government did recently, and years ago that France did, and the Project Blue Book, all the rest of that stuff, without getting into it, I'm just going to say this. The biggest problem I have with UFOs, and what puts it into the category of religion for me, is you can enter a room, two people can enter a room. On one side of the table is a fellow that says, I have seen the Eiffel Tower. And the person on the other side of the table says, I don't believe that the Eiffel Tower exists. And the fellow can say, I have 15 other people out here. They're from the military. Some of them are physicians. Some of them are law enforcement officers, all trained observers of landscape and know what they were looking at. They can all describe it to you in detail. And the fellow can say, well, they're all nuts, or they made a mistake. They were taking drugs. They were under the influence. They're just doing it for attention. They were self-deluded or mass hypnotized. There really can't be an Eiffel Tower. And then the fellow can take out photographs. Well, first of all, drawings, of course, from everybody. Great, they're drawings. They don't prove anything. Then he can take out photographs. And the fellow on the other side of the table can simply say, well, photographs can be faked. Anything can be faked, particularly in the digital age. This could be a rendering of a 3D model that somebody did. All I have, essentially, you know, besides these trumped up, fabricated, so-called concrete evidence, is your word for it and the word of these people that you have out in the hall. There's really no proof that the Eiffel Tower exists. At which point the fella can just, you know, grab the other guy by the lapels and say, come with me. And they get on the plane and they go to France and they go and he goes and he takes and bangs his head against the Eiffel Tower. Look up, there it is. There's the difference. Because every argument that I put forth for the Eiffel Tower can be put forth on unidentified flying objects. And when I say that, I don't mean Venus. I mean the saucers, the craft that people claim to have seen or have seen. You know, whether they claim it or not, what it really comes down to is who do you, on the UFO side of the question is, do you believe that someone can have seen something or experienced something without being able to prove it to you? Can you believe in the reality that they're describing when they have no other proof? Because they can't take you to where the thing is. My final, I've often said the only way this is ever going to be resolved, and part of what really pisses me off, is the fact that it's been dancing on the edge of fact for 60 years, just out of reach. I mean, the closest thing we had to it was the Phoenix Lights, where an entire city witnessed the damn things, or thing, depending on whether it was several or one big giant. And what happened? I mean, where did it go? What happened? What happened with O'Hare Airport? Did it actually not ever occur? Did none of these people see anything? Or did the fact that the media let it go away make it go away? What can you believe? It comes down to, since you can't go and put hands on, for whatever reason, whether it's locked up in some aerospace company or something, or whether it's locked up in some secret government base where you can't let people in, because if you do, then they're going to get an eyeful of classified firepower that we're working on or have completed that we don't want our enemies to know about. Because if you tell your friends, you're telling your enemies, to quote Friedman, Stanton Friedman. Conveniently, all these things are just out of the reach of the general public. You can't actually go take someone and say, all right, after I've told you, after I've described it to you, after I've shown you the drawings, after I've shown you the photographs, after I've shown you the video, I still don't have concrete proof. Here, come, let's go look and ride in one. You can't do that. It's been 60 years of you can't do that, and that really pisses me off and makes me tired. And yet I'm still extremely fascinated by it, because something is going on. I have no idea what it is. I don't know if Ben from the Absolute Peach would actually be interested in participating in this particular roundtable if I can put it together. Essentially, it'll be a multi-channel Skype chat call. But I do know that recently, in one of the episodes of the Absolute Peach, he had just finished reading Communion by Whitley Strieber, And when you read things like that, it's, again, it's a question of belief in individual accounts. We're in the age of no proof, because you can prove anything through fabrication. So now we're essentially right back to, do you believe in testimony? The argument is put forth very often that eyewitness testimony can put a man in the electric chair or the gas chamber, or result in a lethal injection, essentially capital punishment. Eyewitness testimony can do that. Apparently, 20 times that eyewitness testimony cannot make anyone acknowledge a reality of unidentified flying objects as solid craft or whatever from somewhere. And it's probable that because that's all it remains. All it remains is testimony. Yeah, I think maybe some kind of show needs to be put together. Some kind of a Skype chat needs to be arranged. If schedules can be done, I don't know. I should probably have written to you first, Ben, in caffeinated one. Probably someone else, if you'd care to that you'd care to invite as an expert. Or at least someone extremely knowledgeable of the topic, to just give this a kind of a discussion. It deserves more than just my response to an email, long as this one has been. Sorry about this, folks. And maybe we can get together and do that. If you think that'd be a good idea, folks listening, that would certainly be... please let me know. And we can get into all kinds of things. Crop circles. Hoaxes. And the pollution of the subject. Yes, the subject has been thoroughly polluted, which is another thing that pisses me off, by people that will sell books about underground killer lizard men who took them to the Pleiades because they wanted to stand them next to Bigfoot so they could have their picture taken. I don't know. All right, that went on a bit. That went on far, far longer than I expected it to. I do apologize, but I didn't want to just, like, go, oh, yeah, UFOs, geez, that's real interesting. Good secret. Yeah, that's a good secret. No, that's probably one of the major ones. And I'm very glad that you brought it up, Kyle. There's so much garbage out there. It's very discouraging. It's entertaining as hell. It's entertaining as hell, but there is just so much garbage out there. I've often used the phrase signal to noise ratio. How do you pick out what's the actual message, what a fact is, what a truth is, when there's so much static all around it? You know, I mean, that the moon hoax thing is a perfect example of that. But there's fascinating, fascinating individuals connected to all of these conspiracy theories, to all of these grand, massive, global, hidden mysteries that supposedly affect the lives of every man, woman, and child on Earth. Speaking of subjects for IDDFOS. And part of what's so entertaining about it is seeing and listening to, seeing the faces of and listening to the people that are putting forward these ideas. You reminded me of a couple of, one person in particular when you mentioned this moon hoax theory. And that would of course be Richard Hoagland. Now this is not to say Richard Hoagland proposes this moon hoax theory. This is the odd part here. Richard Hoagland is a private citizen, but he was, back in the 60s, he was a science advisor to Walter Cronkite during the moon launches, during the whole NASA mission. He had one of those really young guy dream jobs of being in just the absolute perfect place he wanted to be with these amazing people in an amazing time. Great. Fantastic. He knows And he's in his 60s now, late 60s. He knows that we landed on the moon. And there's all kinds of reasons he knows it, and he's done an article on his website to indicate point after point after point after point, refuting everything that was in any documentary, all these points that people come up with. I don't remember him actually mentioning the laser reflectors, but that's got to be in there somewhere. He also did an extensive amount of research on the Hasselblad cameras that were on the astronauts' chests, the type of film used. He knew personally, met and talked with the guy that developed that, the guy that invented the emulsion for that film, the chemical process or whatever, the substrate, all the rest of the stuff, just became an expert on the photography of that stuff. I mean, the hard science, the actual hard science of knowing what the stuff does and how it does it and what they did with it. But then he takes this other step, and he's taken a whole series of other steps during the course of his literary career, because what he's written, what he began writing about since the 70s, was the face on Mars. That picture that in the late 70s came back from early images of Mars that showed, you know, that very first tilted, blurred, as NASA referred to it, trick of light and shadow that showed a face. From that and from other protuberances on the Martian surface, of course, he came up with this thing called the Monuments of Mars, came up with this thing called hyperdimensional physics. He's a fascinating guy to listen to, because what you're hearing, you can hear as he goes through this incredible labyrinth of points of evidence. His favorite phrase is connect the dots, and he lays out these dots in seemingly perfect fashion. I mean, he describes the points along his line of reasoning in very precise, very detailed ways. And by the time he reaches the end of his story, you're just so dizzy from listening that you know that he's gotten to this is a monument on Mars that was created by intelligent beings, and that all these different pyramids and forts, and the thing is that when they got the close-up images of the Cydonia region on Mars, and they showed the close-up of the fans, of course, you know, they released to the press. There was another big stink about the fact that when NASA released their very first images of the face, they actually actively degraded the image to make it look worse. They had to actively degrade the image to make it look worse, removing information before handing it to the press, to make it look less and less and less like anything that was even remotely like a face. And then, of course, a week or so later, or 4 or 5 days later, the damage had already been done. Then they released the enhanced, actual processed version that had all the gradations of gray in it. And to me, it just looks like this mesa with crumbling crap all over it. You know, a big pile of eroded whatever. And even after that, he insists that it's still a giant monument. Each time something landed on Mars, he would find in what anybody else would see as a field of rocks, he would find, I mean, if you go to this guy's site, you have to see it for yourself. It's astounding. I mean, he finds tank turrets, he finds all kinds of, any odd-shaped rock that he looks at is some kind of an artificial thing, and I just don't see it. I just don't see it. Apparently a lot of other people are buying into his story, but to me, on the one hand, the guy's got an incredible bank of facts and knowledge and statistics and history. He's done enough work to put forward his theories about all this stuff to have earned 4 doctorates already. And of course, after having gotten some original prints from 1971,
a fellow that attended one of his lectures apparently worked for the imaging section of NASA in the early when it was all happening. And in 1971, the story goes, this guy, Ken Johnston, was ordered to destroy the prints for whatever reason. I mean, they, you know, the stories are very, very similar across the board. So he gets these prints from this guy, and he does some scanning on them, and he does image enhancement. And now his other claim is that there are glass structures on the moon. What gets me about it, and I just, like, blasted myself into this letter and completely took over it. I'm sorry. You just reminded me of this whole situation. And it's part of what makes it all interesting. What's interesting about this for me as far as is that these people have an incredible passion that makes them extremely charismatic and fun to listen to. It's great fun to hear this guy go on. But at the same time, I can't buy into it. Because he comes up with a new wild theory every month or two or three. An incredible amount of energy is put into supporting the theory. And I don't mean a theory about planetary mechanics or physics or things like that. A lot of it has to do with politics and NASA. As a matter of fact, most of it has to do with politics and NASA. And I'm jealous of the guy. Why? Because his book, I mean, this is part of what I mean about entertainment and being charismatic and having a passion for the particular conspiracy that you're putting forward. Book was called Dark Mission. The words NASA, dark, and mission are in there somewhere. I think NASA's Dark Mission or Dark Mission, the Hidden Secret History of NASA, whatever. Number 21 on the New York Times bestseller list at one point. I sure wouldn't mind that. Now, he, probably a decade ago, yes, a decade ago, he, I've admitted to and... again, guilty pleasures. I used to listen to the Art Bell Show all the time. I would listen to Coast AM late at night like a fool, sometimes really too late, and then have to get up to work the next day. And that was a five-day-a-week show. He had something that actually could be tested by anybody and kind of blew past it. I don't know what happened to this. His contention was that... the launch schedules at NASA were meant to coincide with certain stars, certain stars that represented Egyptian gods in the old Egyptian pantheon, back when Ra and Isis were being worshipped, which supposedly was all carried forward with... a whole series of secret organizations culminating in the Masons, who supposedly were drawing on all these ancient Egyptian traditions, transmuted, changed, whatever, that the launch schedules at NASA were meant to coincide with specific stars being either at the horizon or as close to 19.5 degrees above the horizon as possible. And that's something that people can check. That's something that people can actually go back if they got the time. And he laid out four of them, I think, in the time that he was on the program when I was listening on the radio. And his expression, as I recall, was, and this happened again and again and again and again and again. Now, if that's the case, now you've got something. Now you've got, you know, people can put in an old version of Redshift, or the most recent version of Redshift, or whatever you use to map the sky, because those are out there. Those programs are out there all over the place. You get a hold of a copy of Redshift and set in the date, the time. You know, you can get the location for the launch and just what star was on the horizon or 19.5 degrees above the horizon. And you got a matchup. That kind of thing would not be done by accident over and over and over and over and over again. And it could lend some kind of a credence to some of the other stuff that you're talking about. But he just, like, that just, he left it. I don't know, maybe he stuck it in his book. "Wow, Sarah, how come Richard Hoagland got more time than you did, and I'm not even done with your letter?" "Because we're going to go someplace else. Because you're going to remind me of somebody else. Because, all right, moon hoax theory, no, Hoagland doesn't support it. He supports some other bizarre theory that I don't buy either, but he does it in such an entertaining way." Let's continue with Sarah's letter. Here we go.
"My belief is that the same issue happened with Roswell. Spy weather balloon lands where it shouldn't have. A government official tells a few lies to cover it up. And we have one of the biggest UFO conspiracy theories of all time. Two classic examples of where the government would have been better off just telling the truth in the first place."
Two examples. Yes, the first example being retouching the photographs that came back from the moon so that they'd be more presentable to the public. I just figured I'd repeat that because I went on so long about Hoagland. And this other one being, gee, the government should have told the truth about Roswell from the beginning. Yeah, they probably should have. The other thing, let me finish Sarah's letter here because I'm going to go on about this. I'm sorry.
"All of the above makes me sound like a huge skeptic, but I'm not really. I believe there are some really weird and wonderful things out there. I think often, though, the causes behind the scenes aren't half as cool as what we can imagine. Best of days, Sarah."
Excellent. Why is it excellent? Well, first of all, it's from Sarah. And second of all, because it provides me with so many opportunities to indulge in my, I keep calling them guilty pleasures. I don't know why. I guess I feel guilty about having looked into this murky area to begin with. And I guess it's like admitting to having eaten an entire pint of some kind of ice cream or something. Just completely self-indulgent. And you may think of, I don't know whether I've ever given the impression that I actually kind of prefer critical thinking, non-emotion driven, and speculative to a point, but not to a point where you completely lose your ability to discern between fact and fiction. But we're going to get probably a lot more heavily into this UFO thing soon, because I'm trying to get something set up. If not a roundtable panel, then a series of roundtable panels or a series of individual talks about it, because it is a massive, massive subject. Now, what you've reminded me of here is this. What you've reminded me of here, Sarah. Thank you very much. Excuse me, I don't think I said thank you for the email here. What you reminded me of is the effect that media has on something that it succeeds in keeping distant from the general public. I'm of the opinion that you are more informed about this Roswell thing than most other people because of the fact that you have somehow heard or read about the spy weather balloon landing. That is to say that you're in that group of people that the meme of that particular explanation has reached at this point. Now, if you don't have any particular interest in something like this, then and most people don't, then you're not even going to be aware of that. One of the things that conspiracy theorists rely on, I should say dishonest conspiracy theorists. Conspiracy theorists that want to sell books, DVDs, and videos at conventions by coming up with outlandish stuff that they can kind of sort of almost substantiate. And I don't think they're all like that. I think 90% of them actually positively do believe what it is they're putting forward and writing about. They absolutely, in their hearts, in their minds, believe in what they're talking about. But there are some out there that are just taking advantage of the gullible. Or taking advantage of, taking advantage of people like me who really, really wish this stuff were true. I think I made mention of this in one of the emails that I sent out when I was trying to set up this series of UFO shows. I really want the stuff to be true, and I have a lot of fun trying to buy into it as I get back into it. Because I'm going to admit, I jump back in feet first. Every 3 or 4 years, I end up doing this. I end up getting right back into the subject, getting pissed off as hell, because I'm having so much fun getting into the subject. And then I step out of it again because I just get tired of walking out the front door, into the daylight, into the fingers in the quote position, real world, and feeling like a gullible twit. It gets older and older each time it happens. And it engenders the kind of anger that I talked about in the last show. It's like, Adam, when are you going to learn? Well, at any rate, the Roswell thing. Very interesting, because the more you actually explore this stuff, the more you actually look into it and start digging into it, you get sucked into this other reality. And it's dependent completely upon testimony. It's always, in my mind, it's always been dependent completely on testimony. And even when they dig out these ancient, they're not ancient, they're only 60 years old, printed memos, authentic, typed out in the 1940s on an Underwood, on onion skin, practically falling apart. Document experts have verified their authenticity, all the rest of this stuff. They're documents that describe something that somebody else saw or said. Communications between departments of the military, the FBI, all the rest of this stuff. Freedom of Information Act released documents that are redacted all over the place, of course. And those parts where it's not, they draw links, they pull sentences, and they find essentially the printed version of the paper trail that lays out decade after decade after decade after decade within the government the cover-up. Great. That's fine. Wonderful. Now you've got something to add to the videotape. Now you've got something to add to the eyewitness testimony. Now you've got something to add to the photographs and drawings. So what was it about spy weather balloon that reminded me? Oh, I think I mentioned probably the most knowledgeable person about UFOs at present is Stanton Friedman. The reason I say that is because of these people, of these personalities, and there aren't all that many of them, but some of them really peak, and he's one of them, of course, because he's been doing this kind of research for something like 35 years. I have a certain amount of respect for the guy. Actually, I've got more respect for the guy than I do for Hoagland, and I listen more closely, and I mean, I pay closer attention to what this guy says, because he doesn't rely completely on eyewitness testimony. He goes to archives, he goes to get the documents, he tries to tie it all together. And what I like most about it is he knew that the Air Force had lied about the weather balloon. And then when they came out with the news story about the mogul, the top secret mogul project, he knew that they were lying about that, and he could prove it. I'm going to play a clip here that I took from one of the getting myself set up, ready, notes, sound clips, essentially for the upcoming shows. I'm going to do at least two. I think I'm going to do at least two on the UFO thing that Kyle brought up in the last episode. And I keep throwing Kyle under the bus for this. I don't think I've stated clearly enough that I really am glad he did, because I have so much fun with this. In a way, half of it is me having fun and indulging. Half of it is me being sucked in and completely suckered by these people and thinking to myself, yeah, I got to do something about this. I got to learn more. And the rest, and the other half, is that three halves? There's 150% of me now What is up with that? I'm not getting very far with this, am I? What I'm trying to say is, I keep mentioning Kyle having brought it up as if I'm blaming him for the subject being brought to the fore here. No, I'm not. I'm thanking him for actually me using it as an excuse. This probably would have been dealt with on IDDFOS a lot sooner if I had just had the nerve to come out and say, you know what, I'd really like to talk about this. All right, so when I derailed myself, I forgot completely where I left off. I'm going to play a clip from... Oh, that was it. I'm going to play a clip from one of the lectures that Stanton Friedman gave at one of the UFO conferences, of which he attends, needless to say, he attends nearly all the major ones. And just a quick listen to what he had to say about the Roswell spy weather balloon thing. This is only about three and a half minutes. Not really long.
Speaking about the debris, Colonel Sheridan Cabot, who for 20 years had sort of said, well, I wasn't really there and I don't remember anything and so forth. But when the Air Force comes calling, he's got to give him a story. Colonel Weaver came to see him, and here's what he said. The area of this debris was very small, about 20 feet square, and the material was spread on the ground. But there was no gouge or crater or other obvious sign of impact. I remember recognizing this material as being consistent with a weather balloon. We gathered up some of this material, which would easily fit into one vehicle. Colonel Sheridan Cabot was lying through his teeth. The area of the debris was like 3/4 of a mile long and a few hundred feet wide. And if it would easily fit in one vehicle, why did the rancher take a little bit of stuff into town, and then Jesse Marcel and Cabot had to go back with him? If it would easily fit in one vehicle, he would have brought it and said, hey, guys, here's your saucer. Where's my reward? He left most of it out there, lying through his teeth. He knew he was supposed to say weather balloon. He forgot that it was supposed to be a mogul balloon, which is 23 balloons at 20-foot intervals, hung together with string, with sono buoys and other things, which nobody ever mentioned ever finding out there. Isn't that amazing? Now, here's their big report, which has the wrong picture on the cover because the rancher never said he saw anything come down. This is the mogul balloon explanation. It has other lies in it, but mogul balloon doesn't fit. Either the timing, the kinds of materials, the amount of materials. New York Times carried it front page, a 60-column-inch article, upper left-hand corner, started of the Sunday Times. There is no better position for an article in the country. They didn't talk to anybody connected with Roswell. They talked to mogul balloon people, of course. They mentioned several books about Roswell, didn't mention mine, the only one of the books by a scientist. But why let the facts get in the way of a good debunking? Now, Colonel... The colonel who wrote the book, Weaver, he quoted from this FBI memo. I know you can't read it, but the point is that he said, the object found resembles a high-altitude weather balloon or and radar reflector, and then he left out. But that telephonic conversation between their office and Wright Field had not borne out this belief. That part gets left out. So he... lets it stand that the FBI said it was a radar reflector. They didn't say it was a radar reflector. They said it wasn't a radar reflector. That's cover-up. He's got a big, fat book, but he doesn't include this one page. So you don't know that he's lying to you. Standard practice, I guess. This is the report, part of the cover-up, Air Force Headquarters, United States Air Force. This is the one with the beautiful explanation of crash test dummies. Which, of course, weren't dropped until 6 years after Roswell. So they invented time travel for crash test dummies, but not for the rest of us, I guess. I also talked to the man in charge of the crash test dummy program. When I talked to him, he's a little older than this. He pointed out that the crash test dummies, like Sierra Sam here, are 6 feet tall and 175 pounds. They have to be the same size and weight as pilots. No way in the world they could be confused with a little guy this big, small, et cetera, et cetera. But again, If lying gets you where you want to go, they're going to do it. And they wonder that our children lie.
Now I'm going to put a link in the Kutikatingatongatongs to the Google video that came from. And I'm also going to put a link in the Kutikatingatongatongs, which I think sounds actually like a really good made-up term to apply to objects found on an alien landscape, which are, to everybody else, or seen from the sky, actually. I mean, he was pulling stuff. Hoagland, I'm talking about Richard Hoagland here at this point, sorry, had to throw that in. He was pulling stuff out of the satellite imagery, too, let alone the landers. Objects or apparent artificial alien constructs and cities and all the rest of the stuff that he was seeing and I wasn't, and apparently quite a lot of other people that he was talking to wasn't seeing it either. But let's call them Kutikatingatongatongs. Or not. I try to be not too uncharitable about folks like this, because they really do feel passionate about something. And they've achieved a measure of success, if only for the fact that they're famous for having pursued what they've pursued this long. Some will just refer to them as scam artists and charlatans, and, well, all right, you know what, go ahead, but they're a lot of fun to listen to. They're just a blast to listen to. So, yeah, the thing about Friedman is he talked to the people that were there. He talked to and videotaped the people that were there, spent 27 years investigating in general, Roswell. He actually initiated the earliest investigation of it with videotaped and recorded testimony. So he talked to all the people that were involved there at the time. He researched the history, the background, the paperwork, the base, the environment in the country, the newspaper articles. He went to 20 different document archives to find his information and to have reasons for all the things that he was saying. Did he draw a wrong conclusion? I don't know. Honestly, I really don't know. Should I believe him over the Air Force? Currently the Air Force, then the Army, because they weren't the Air Force in 1947. They got turned into that later. Should I believe them? I don't think so. I really don't. They as much as practically broadcast to anybody that cared or was paying attention that they were lying. Even in this most recent thing, he was talking about the crash test dummies. They just came out with out of the blue with this Roswell case closed, and ended up just looking like idiots. That was a heartfelt sigh, folks. That was a heartfelt sigh, because I started the microphone, I think, about four or five times. Didn't start the microphone. I started recording. The microphone doesn't really go anywhere. Hasn't got a pull cord on the side that I have to yank on a couple of times before it sputters and kicks into life. No, it just sits here on the end of the stand, waiting for me to say something more about this. Well, Adam, you were the one that was all hot and heavy to get into the subject. You were the one that said, I really want to talk about UFOs. So glad I got an email about it. Well, you know, yeah, I was. And yeah, I do. But there's, just like I said, there's a whole lot of garbage out there. There's a whole lot of crap that sticks to this subject. You get it all over you. It's like tar. There's a whole bunch of tar. Bubbling, hot, sticky, impossible to get off yourself or your clothing. If you walk up to a bubbling vat of tar and try to get something out of it, you're asking for trouble. That's what this subject is like. That also is part of what gets me pissed off, makes me a little bit angry. And I said in the last episode, I was tired of this subject. I was tired of the fact that it just wouldn't go away and that I keep ping-ponging back and forth between maybe there's something to it and maybe I should just stop being such an idiot and wasting my time. I don't know that it's changed that much, really, for myself personally. I kept trying to think, you know, why am I so constantly in two minds about this? Why am I so split, so schizophrenic about this? And now, for the record, just so nobody has me mistaken here, I do not subscribe to or endorse the reasoning of Richard Hoagland, nor do I agree with the conclusions that he's reached based on who knows what. I just find it extremely entertaining to follow his explanations. He is a showman. He is an entertainer. And he knows he has to be, because you can't sell books unless you're not. I'm not in that camp. I just like listening to it. And I think I could say the same probably for, I don't know what the percentage is, because I don't know all about everybody that's running around at these conventions and making these speeches and giving these presentations. I don't know all about these people and what they have to say. I've gone into it a hell of a lot and looked at it and read and researched. I can't even say research. That implies, you know, a serious application of my energies to it. Never have really done that. I don't have the books on the shelf. I don't buy them. I won't spend the money on it. But I would have to say that a large percentage of these people, I would also say I don't subscribe to what they have to say. Some of the stuff is just too ridiculous for me. 10 years ago, Dr. Stephen Greer came across as a very professional, very credible, and very competent advocate for further study, for listening to extremely credible witnesses. Today, to me, he doesn't come across that way. He comes across as someone that slightly has lost his mind. I take far less of what he has to say seriously, and I don't know whether it's because this kind of getting too heavily into this kind of thing can drive you crazy or not. I wouldn't be surprised if that were the case. Because, as I said before, it's got tar all over it. You can't come near it. I'm probably risking my job search right now just by bringing this subject up. Is that paranoia? No, not really, because my resume, my online resume, includes links to my website, anim5.com. On my website, there is a link. Now, you know, you go to anim5.com, you're not exactly looking at a straight-laced corporate representation of somebody that you want hiring, somebody that you want handling your database with sensitive materials in it, that needs competence, security, and knowledge of how to go about doing it. No, it's representative of somebody that's already of an artistic bent. I understand that. As a matter of fact, I'm probably going to come up with some pages that I can direct people to that don't actually show quite so creative a mind. I don't know whether that's a good or a bad idea. In today's corporate environment, it's probably a good idea to direct them away from those pages toward a far more conservative portfolio. Something that's stylish but runs with the pack. But I get off the subject. There's a link, of course, on that page to IDDFOS. if they happen to click that little yellow dummy and go to International Detective Dragons from Outer Space homepage. Just the last episode, and this episode too, because it's going to have to be in the notes, they are going to see the letters together, UFO. The instant they see that, the instant someone in charge of hiring a person for their company sees that, no matter what the context, slides me off the end of the desk into the circular file. Why is that? Why is this stigma attached to it? Well, you said it yourself, Adam. You said it yourself. 60 years of not being able to put your hands on anything. 60 years of everybody saying, oh, there's aliens, oh, there's spacecraft, oh, there's saucers, oh, there's this, that, and the other thing. And all anybody can come up with is stuff that is easily faked. Or if it isn't easily faked, it's just testimony. It's just people talking about what they saw. Which, unfortunately, in today's world, may be good enough to put somebody in the electric chair, but just isn't good enough to make anyone else believe them, particularly on something this outrageous, outlandish, unbelievably fictional, encroaching its way into the real world, air quotes included. Yeah, I've said it, and I still say it. It's extremely annoying. It's very irritating. Where's the hardware? That is the missing linchpin behind this whole thing. Where is the hardware? Anybody that claims to have an answer is speculating entirely. Those that are making the most money selling these books are speculating with a certain degree of expertise, finesse, and savvy regarding just where it is nobody can go. All wild claims, all wild speculation, peppered with those bright, shiny granules of truth. When it comes to this hardware thing, when it comes to this lead a crowd of people over to it where you can find it, demonstrate it in front of them, get into it, fly around in it, etc., conclusion that could finally be reached, they all point to where you, me, or anybody else you know could never go. I love the lectures that they give about secret underground bases. The biggest joke of it all, is Area 51. But they mention other ones. There's a secret base, there's a secret memo. If you're telling me it's a secret, it isn't. Because you know about it. As soon as you say, well, it's located in this secret base in such and such a state, and this is where the witnesses are, then it's not a secret, plain and simple. But they're always in places like this. The hardware itself, if you want to jump even deeper into the pool, if you want to stick your arm down further into that tar, then the bodies, too, bodies of alien beings. They're always sequestered in some place that's just impossible for anybody to actually get to. You can't even begin to say, well, if only we could search here. Not going to happen. And of course, I mean, the absolutely easiest thing, so long as you're on an outlandish topic, is to say, well, the base is on the other side of the moon, or the base is on Europa, or the base is on Titan, or Mars, or, you know, obviously some place nobody's going to be putting on their investigative journalist cap and running out to real quick. So it's gone on for so damn long. So why isn't this enough to... And this, of course, adds to the stigma. This, of course, makes the tar hotter, stickier, and the whole subject of those three letters run together, UFO, the purview of socially unacceptable nutcases that have somehow lost their minds for even considering talking about this. It's that kind of thing. Government disclosure? That seems to be the thing people are going for, government disclosure. You know what? I could care less what the government has to say about this. I could really care less. Because they're just, they and by they I mean elected officials working within the current popular government by representation structured behemoth that supposedly makes all the federal and legal things happen within the country. That's the government I'm talking about. Congress, Senate, President and Presidential Cabinet, Judiciary, all that. Military. I don't care what they have to say about it. So far as I know, they could come out tomorrow with the biggest and best disclosure that they could make, and to me that would be, well, yes. Yes, we have been taking reports of unidentified flying objects from people, and yes, 21% of them have been completely unidentifiable with extremely credible witnesses, video, radar tracking, ground trace evidence of where they landed, all the rest of this stuff. Yes, we've been studying it for decades, and we have all the information here, and the conclusions that we reach are people have seen things that can't be explained. Yes, in 2002, we scrambled two F-16 jets to chase down a blue pulsating object on the outskirts of Washington, D.C. Of course we did. It was after 9/11. We were on very high security. No, we don't know what it was. Basically, what do you want, you know, what do you want people to do? If I were in the government and I you know, knew that where there was file cabinet after file cabinet after file cabinet of all this kind of stuff, documented as best anybody can, because these things just go away. The one at O'Hare Airport, very, very recently, that was witnessed by all these different people, just left. The Phoenix lights that was videotaped, actually not just on that evening, but for a year prior at intermittent times. Gone, it left. What are you going to do? You want to tell the next step then is hold a full investigation. Investigate what? What do you want them to do? Where do you want them to go? So I hear this. I hear, you know, disclosure. We want full disclosure. We want you to tell the public everything you know about this. They don't know anything more than they know less, in all likelihood, than all these authors and researchers that are doing any kind of serious work about it out in the field, touring these UFO circuits and talking about it. That's likely, unless they're military. Why say that? Well, because if something is up there that you can't identify and it does take off, well, who's got the resources to go any step further than, wow, what was that? Ooh, there it went. They've got the budget and the resources to actually take it at least a step further. And by that step further, it's simply, well, record whatever you can find on radar and send something after it. What's the fastest thing we got? Well, an attack interceptor jet. Okay, send that. Didn't catch it. Maybe caught some more video to add to the giant pile of this thing behaving in this silvery metallic object behaving in a strange way, evading what's been sent after it. Maybe it is an atmospheric phenomenon that just doesn't like jets, but okay, so they've taken it a step further. Then you get into the folks that say, well, yeah, since they're the military and they do have the budget and they do have the means necessary to do something about it, that they've been shot down, that these things have been shot down. I find that to be a joke. I really do. I also find anybody that makes claims of treaties or anything like that to be a joke too. Would you sign a treaty with the crickets in your backyard? Or take it a little higher than that. Okay, would you go out to those 125,000 gorillas that were just found out in the Congo and go and sign a treaty with them? What a ridiculous idea. In my opinion, I don't know. But this whole thing has this tinfoil hat stigma around it. that is the other aspect of it that kind of pisses me off. Because, as I said, whenever I talk about this, I've got to keep somebody in the room with me in my imagination. I got to visualize. I couldn't come up with the name last time, but since I jumped feet first into this again and started talking about it, I have to visualize somebody like Robert Salas. Who the hell is Robert Salas, Adam? Well, there's lots of people out there that have extremely high credibility. Some people say, you know, I love hearing that. They say, well, a police officer saw it. I know some cops. I don't care what they think they saw. All right, if you don't want to take the word of somebody that could lose their job if they're found drunk or under the influence of anything or doesn't know how to observe anything, they risk their jobs as soon as they withdraw a weapon from its holster. They're risking their job, cops. They're also risking their lives, by the way. But, you know, if you don't want to take their word for it, okay, fine. You trust a pilot to get you from point A to point B. There's plenty of pilot sightings, not nearly as many as there should be, because, of course, they lose their jobs, get grounded, are ordered to take psychiatric evaluations, and they're also ordered never, ever to speak about what they saw and mention the name of the company they work for in the same breath. Because the airlines don't want people thinking that there are pilots flying for them that might actually have seen a UFO. That means, such and such an airline hires nutcases. All right, back to Robert Salas. You'll trust a cop when some lunatic is banging on your front door or trying to break into your basement or something like that. You'll trust a pilot to get you from point A to point B. Back in the 60s, in a very high state of well-founded paranoia, it was well-founded paranoia, the Cold War, when both sides had a nuclear arsenal that was capable of wiping cities off the map, you would trust someone to be down in the silos of the Minuteman missiles with, we often say this president has their finger on the button. Well, not literally. Somebody like Robert Salas literally had their finger on the button. The one of two guys that actually throw the switch. When somebody like that gets up and testifies, I can't just say this is some loser who is economically powerless. That's another way of saying this guy lives in a trailer park. You know, living in a trailer park doesn't mean you're less of a human being. It doesn't mean that you are of less value than anyone else because you live in a trailer park. It means that you are less economically powerful. When my family was living in projects in Newark, we were less economically powerful. So they come up with this, well, you know, most of these sightings are by people that live in trailer parks that have tinfoil hats on their heads. I think it might be safe to say that most of these sightings, most of these descriptions and call-ins and experiences probably are from people that are less economically powerful, because what the hell do they have to lose? What do they have to lose? You get even less of these reports from presidents and doctors and lawyers and engineers and scientists because, of course you get less of them. Nobody in a high-earning position with a career and a reputation wants even a hint of them having seen or experienced anything getting out for anyone to find, because they're risking it. So of course you're getting more reports from poor people because they have less to lose. What do they care? In a way, they care a lot, because even at that level, they don't want their friends laughing at them. It's a taboo subject. It is just, you can't talk about it without someone thinking you're insane. It doesn't matter how many events have gone on in the past 60 years. It just doesn't matter, because the news isn't covering it. The news lets it go away and just doesn't handle it. What was the big deal with this guy down in the Minuteman missile silos at Maelstrom Air Force Base? This is what he claims. This is, now, here we go. It's testimony again, of course, it's testimony. But this is somebody that was trusted with a f***ing nuclear missile. The launch of a nuclear missile. Okay, gets a call from up top because he's down on the silo. The guard there is looking at, and any other personnel that are there are looking at, a yellowish orange glowing object. Not a cloud, not a piece of gas. Well, you know, I don't even want to go into what it was they saw. I have no idea. There's recreations ad infinitum. Every time a new computer program comes out, there's a new polish to put on their sighting of UFO animation. You know, this is what it looked like. I doubt sincerely that they actually go to the witness and say, is this close to what you saw? And if they do, well, good for them. But so what? It's computer animation. Fine. He gets a call from the guard up top saying there's this reddish-orange glowing object hovering over the front gate. I don't remember what size it was supposed to be. Whatever. Okay, fine. That's kind of too bad. Well, yeah, there you are looking at this thing. So he tells his commanding officer, who happens to be down there with him, on the off shift, he wakes up his CO and says, I got a call saying such and such. And then his missile goes from a ready launch, ready to launch, to a no-go, from go to no-go, as he put it, condition. Okay, not just his missile, but 10 other missiles on his base. In another state, roughly about the same time, if I'm remembering this correctly, another 8 or 9 missiles go down. And we don't have to take his word for it, because he went through all the Freedom of Information Act stuff to research the time. After he retired, of course, he wouldn't do it during his career, and he was sworn never to say anything about stuff like this. You know, if you want to go into all the details of this, you can find it. It's readily available online. I could have a sheet in front of me and just read off to you what it was, all the specifics. It isn't necessary. The necessary part is to consider who this person is, what they're saying, and whether I believe them or not. Because it just brings us right back around to the thing, you know. Did Grandpa run through his retirement money and wants to sell a book and leave something nice for his grandkids, so he's coming up with a story? You could say that, except for the fact that he dug out these documents from the same era through the Freedom of Information Act to confirm everything that he's saying. And he's not the only one. You know, aside from these mass sightings, like Phoenix, they're all over the world, you know. I mean, I'm United States-centric when I talk about these things. The mass sightings are all over the world. You don't even have to look at that. You can look at people of this guy's caliber and professionalism and history, and which reality do I step in here is part of what I'm saying. When I shut this microphone off and I go out that front door and I go job hunting, I am in a totally different reality. I am in a reality where these things just don't happen, where it's fiction, it's entertainment. Okay, and back we are, and what was I talking about? I think the last words were fiction, entertainment. It's very telling. It's one of those things where, and it's sad, it's very sad, particularly for the people that experience something, the ones that actually have seen, not some light far off in the sky doing a weird thing, because that could be anything. That could be 30 or 40 Mylar balloons from some kid's party that got let loose and caught a high wind up above and are moving. They're flying off towards the ocean. shiny, silvery Mylar birthday balloons. You catch the sun on those in the right way, they'll look like a fleet of damn invader ships. And they'll behave in wild ways. They'll move around in crazy ways because they're being blown around by the wind. They're light as hell. No, I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about massive things with lights on them that hover in place and then take off in an instant. That move around and then shoot off in an instant. That's been seen. What are you going to say to these people? Gee, sorry you were there. Now you're one of those nutcases that has seen this thing because it's not a part of my reality. It can't be. You now belong on the Sci-Fi Channel. And if anybody's going to do a documentary, you know, I mean, I say that the media ignores the subject. In a way, yeah. In another way, no. There's a paradox going on there, too. They know that the highest ratings they can get on some nights is by putting on a UFO documentary. When the newspaper that ran the article on the O'Hare Airport UFO, they didn't even have a picture. They didn't even have a snapshot. They ran the story, and they got more hits on that story on their website than any other story in the history of anything they ever did for 4 days straight. So, if anything, the internet allows people to actually look into it without having to be embarrassed about going into a bookstore and maybe actually buying one of the books on the subject. I don't know that I particularly recommend you do that. Buying any of the books, because who the hell knows who's trying to make a buck and has anything of use to say about it. But yeah, people are interested in it, just don't let anybody else know. So yeah, officer, whatever your name is, you were there, you saw it, you radioed it in. Sorry, now you're part of that fringe element off, because most everybody on Earth, 99 point whatever percent of the people on Earth have never seen anything like this. It therefore does not exist. You therefore are lying, have an overactive imagination, or you saw something that's very easily explained, which for some reason in your entire lifetime experience you've never seen before and have never seen since. But of course it's very easily explained what you saw that night. But it can't be a part of my reality. All right, the media ignoring the thing? No. They know it's popular. But if you picture the media as a chimp with rabies that's just been given a bucket of sugar, and the truth about the subject, or the subject just basically the facts that are known, the testimony, the whatever, whatever constitutes evidence, particularly now, everything minus, you know, the hardware and the bodies, always minus the hardware and the bodies. Picture that as a soft clay sculpture. The media is like that with this subject. It grabs that sculpture and it twists it into an unrecognizable lump, flings bits and pieces of it all over the place, steps on it, and then defecates on it. In most cases, because it isn't interested actually in journalism as far as this goes, because everybody knows that if you talk about it or treat it seriously, if you actually look into it and investigate specific things about it, then you have stepped off the deep end and you're somehow nuts. You are less credible, you are less sane, and there's something wrong with you to consider the subject seriously. That pisses me off. And I think it should piss a lot of people off. I know, you know, anybody listening to this knows that I'm not lying. You know that you're not going to go into wherever it is you work tomorrow and start talking about this. Not, of course, unless everybody there where you work actually had to step outside and see something. Then it'd be a different story. But just to bring the thing up as a subject, like, oh, my kid is doing a report on you, you can't even broach it like that. My kid is doing a report in school on UFOs. Unbelievable, these kids. How do they get away with letting them learn stuff like that? I don't know. I don't know what to tell them. He comes up, he's asking me about it. I've never seen anything like that. Go further with it. Unless you express the opinion that you believe it's all nonsense and bullshit, unless you immediately express that opinion, then your coworkers are going to be behind your back making faces at each other. It's a stigma. You're not allowed to talk about it and not be considered sane, not be considered some kind of a Looney Tunes nutcase. And I mean, seriously, among close friends, maybe a different story. People that know you, you know them, you've known them for years, you get together, you talk about anything. Maybe that's a different story. But generally, from the general to the specific, it all has to do with scale. It all has to do with scale. And that works that way in my mind, too. What are you talking about now, Adam? All right. Let's take it a step further. You're at work. You're talking to your coworkers about this subject. Suppose you're brave enough to even say, well, you know, remember we vacationed that lake last year? Yeah, my grandma used to own the house. Oh, she'd tell me all kinds of stories about what went on there, you know, Revolutionary War stuff. And in the 50s, she saw she told us about this UFO sighting they had up there. Honest to God, swear to God. That they had this, she was telling us about this kind of light off in the distance that would do weird things, you know, for a couple of weeks, and then it went away. Made the local paper. She saw it too when she was a little girl. Fun lake to go to. You know what? That gets blown over. That's okay. That's fine. Why? Because there's a distance thing. There's a distance of it wasn't me, it was a relative. Then there's a distance of what the relative saw to this light off in the distance. People feel safe with that. People feel safe with that because there's a scale involved that pushes it further and further off. That's why SETI is getting any funding at all. If they do find anything, well, it's okay. It's way, way out there. The results of that, of a genuine artificial signal, would be profound, but it would still be, well, they're way out here. They're not right here in our neighborhood. Scale. Distance. Now compare the grandma saw lights when she was a little girl story out on the lake that we vacationed at to, oh, we vacationed out at the lake. You see this mark on my arm? And go into any kind of a story about having encountered anything firsthand or seen anything firsthand close up. That's when your credibility level goes down and down and down and down and down, and your nutcase dimwit level, you know, the bullshit meter just shoots through the roof as far as people even considering what you have to say. You've gone off the deep end. You've lost it. I'll be honest with you. Somebody standing in front of me telling me a story like that, like, you know, I was abducted or I was this, that, or the other thing, it's the same reaction happens in me. I would have to look at this person. I would have to look them in the eye and seriously wonder whether I'm dealing with someone sane. Automatically leaping to that conclusion, of course, because it doesn't belong in my reality. And it can't belong in my reality until they come up with the hardware and the bodies. Until they come up with, here's the Eiffel Tower. Until they can grab me by the back of the head and bang my head on the saucer. And we can both get in it and fly around and say, oh, okay, here's the power source. This is how they work. This is that and the other thing. So long as they keep zipping off, going away, disappearing into either forever or some place that nobody could ever get to, this is just going to keep going on and on and on and on and on. Now, have I jumped the topic and hogged it, as it were, preemptively of these talks that I hope to have soon? Not really. No, because there's just too much to cover. Political implications, scientific implications, worldwide impact, fact or fiction, witness credibility, the evolution of technology as we've come to witness it before our eyes, I should say something about that. Now, a lot of people are coming up with, well, we wouldn't have had fiber optics, we wouldn't have had the microchip, we wouldn't have had this, that, and the other thing, unless they back-engineered it from some... Give me a break. That is hogwash, and it's an insult to the people that spent lifetimes studying, innovating, and experimenting to come up with these incredible technologies. It's an insult. It's a slap in their face. Because the reason we have these things is because disciplined, knowledgeable, intelligent, and very talented people spent years and years and years of their life figuring out how to do it. It's hardware you actually can put your hands on. And it isn't because, in my opinion, because this is the reality that I have to, that I place myself in my opinion. No, they didn't get it from elsewhere. It wasn't back engineered from something dropped out of the sky or shot out of the sky or dug out of a pit in New Mexico. It's a result of people that worked hard. But do I think that a weather balloon crashed in New Mexico? No. I don't think 23 weather balloons that could easily have been recognizable as such with all the sonar buoys and radar reflectors on them could easily have been recognized as such by the intelligence officer of the most elite military force on the planet at the time would have had a hard time understanding what he was looking at. And the whole idea is, well, yes, we understand that. They lied about that because it was a secret spy. The hardware itself, reflectors, balloons, sonobuoys, all that stuff was around. That was known. There was nothing secret about it. It was the purpose it was sent up for that was secret. They'd send these things up all the time, and they'd come down wherever they came down. And being made of neoprene, they'd degenerate into powder after a couple of weeks. So no, the spy balloon story is another lame thing, another lame sidestepping of what actually happened. And if it was the Mogul Balloon Project that was there, it's not something that would have been flown under armed guard to Fort Worth, and then on to Wright-Patterson Air Force Base. All right, we're going to go to closing music now because like I said, I could go on and on and on about this, and I'm really sorry. Having a hard time with this. As much as I wanted to talk about it, I'm stepping in between the world of entertainment and the world of, you know, what's real. And I think it happens to anybody that actually gets into it. Seriously. If you dare, go ahead and check out the video links. Matter of fact, just use those video links to get to any other aspect of this thing. And you will see people that are extremely entertaining, extremely knowledgeable, because they have to be, because either you're passionate about something and you know all about it, or you really want to pull off a good scam, so you better know all about it. You're going to see lots of entertaining people one way or another, and some very interesting stuff. Or leave it completely alone, and just let nutcases like Adam 5 deal with it.